Well, you wondered when December was finally going to arrive, so it arrived today. It is Wednesday, finally cooled. Weather that feels more like December the 5th, 2012. Time again for After News with Amos, the talk show of record of our African-American community. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. Every major downtown of every major city in the country has in it that's kind of like your basement that doesn't have any, you know, that you never fixed up before. And in Indianapolis, the area south of the railroad track has always been the area of downtown that's kind of like, ugh, you know, mucky and empty lots and what have you. And it started to turn around with the building of Lucas Oil Stadium several years ago. And the only other thing south of downtown, south of the railroad track, was the Eli Lilly and Company headquarters, because this was the area of downtown, the area of the city where Colonel Eli Lilly, way, way back in the day, set up his laboratory. Well, now there is a major development that is in the process of parts of it have been completed and opening. Others will open up over the next several weeks. Here at the corner of South Street and Delaware, in what used to be empty lots, junk from the railroad tracks just south of what used to be Conseco Fieldhouse, now Bankers Life Fieldhouse. It is called City Way, and it's not just two or three buildings slapped up on the street. This is what they call an urban development design, where people can live in apartments, not condos, you know, enjoy a fine meal, have a restaurant, a hotel, and what have you, and even have space for you just to walk around. And there's even a park or two, a YMCA coming. It's a different way of urban development. And we're here in a special edition of After News with Amos on this Wednesday to find out, how do they do it here? Were any of us involved in building and putting it together? And more importantly, can this kind of development be duplicated in some of the older neighborhoods of our cities here in Indianapolis and Indiana? I'm in what is called the, what do they call this thing? The Discovery Center. This is sort of like if you were going to buy a house, where you come to see the model home or the model apartment. But this thing is fancy. Yes, it's the Christmas season, so they got Christmas music. They've got the poinsettias. They've got the lovely folks that can explain everything about City Way. They even got the pens and the lip gloss where you could take away with you. But I'm going to walk into an area where they've got a television screen. When I first walked in here, I thought I was in the CNN studios in Atlanta, because it's a touch screen. This is all put together by the Buckingham Companies, which is an Indianapolis-based developer. This is not a developer from out of town. This is not Donald Trump. This is not some fly-by-night. These are folks that know what they're doing. Scott Travis is one of the vice presidents here at Buckingham, and he's for the last you know, couple of years been working on City Way. This is kind of his baby, so I think he feels like the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge right now. Scott, first of all, you know, it's a pleasure to be here. First of all, what is City Way? What's it designed to do?
City Way is an infill development of 10-acre proportions. So we're talking about a mixed-use development that has more than it has living components, it has working components in play. So you have 40,000 square feet of retail space, which will be full of restaurants, fast casual, to fine dining. We have 250 upscale apartments. We have structured parking for nearly 800 cars and another 200 on surface lots. And then we have a hotel that has has 209 rooms.
Now, how did this project come together? I mean, from what I understand, and part of this, there's been a lot of, you know, scuttlebutt and gobbledygook and half-truths and untruths about this project. But part of the catalyst, and correct me if I'm wrong, is we're right down the street from the corporate headquarters of Eli Lilly, and for many, many years, visitors would come from around the world to call on Lilly to try to, you know, do business with them. And they would always stay in hotels a mile away, half a mile away. And I guess the people at Lilly said, why can't we have a hotel closer where our customers stay? Is that one of the reasons that kind of started people talking?
Yeah, I think the primary reason, and it was illustrated best by Dr. John Lechleiter, when he said 4 years ago, our best asset as a company is our people, and we need to be able to attract and retain the best. And when we look around ourselves, we have 135 acres downtown, and we have disconnected ourselves from the urban core, and we've disconnected ourselves from services with all of the vast parking lots around the facility. So they looked at this land as an asset that they could reposition, and so they called us 4 years ago and asked us to put together a plan and build a program around their needs, but also the needs of the city for what would go best in this particular site. And with the residential component, they certainly have the opportunity to attract young professionals out of college that want to work and live within two blocks of where they live or where they work. They can bike to work. They can walk to the YMCA. They can their friends and family can come down and they can have a meal next to their house and where they work. So the genesis of this project was really that was the beginning of the project where Lilly realized this land was not best positioned as a parking lot to support their attracting and retaining talent.
Is it also a wellness component because, you know, Lilly has the cafeteria inside. We've been privileged, to have done a broadcast inside Lilly's, but they got a big cafeteria. But is this something where, hey, within a couple of blocks you can walk, you know, and go someplace else, you know, for lunch or for dinner, and there's a wellness component instead of getting in your car and driving over, you know, five or six blocks across the other side of the railroad tracks to the other side of downtown?
Absolutely. We have, if you draw a ring around this particular site within how many employees are daytime employees are within a 5-minute walk, the number is 18,000. And if you go just 10 minutes, which is the distance to the circle from our site, you have 56,000 employees that can walk here for lunch.
So now, where did the dollars come, you know, to put this together? Because that has also been, you know, one of the question marks in terms of taxpayers' dollars, the people here of the city of Indianapolis and Marion County, their investment, Lilly's investment, Buckingham's investment. Where did all the money come from? Y'all didn't hit the lottery and didn't tell anybody, did you?
No, of course not. It's a very complex structure. There are about 8 layers to this. Ultimately, the state provided some funds. The city provided some funds. And there was a municipal bond sale that provided the finance portion of the project. Obviously, there was a cash infusion from the developer and also from Lilly in that regard. So the capital stack on this project, and then the YMCA is also a piece of that. And we should probably talk more about the why, but the total package was $155 million, but the city financed or municipal bonds was $86 million of that project.
So if this project's successful, we get any of that money back?
Every bit of the money comes back. This project, as opposed to some where there's a tax abatement, we are paying all property taxes.
Well, you're paying. Wait a minute. All these buildings that I'm seeing here, you're cutting a check to the treasurer. So we're going to get some property tax money from day one.
There is the tax revenue from this project is there's a opportunity for if the TIF surplus needs to step in and cover debt service, if the project does not support it, then there's a possibility that money would come back to the project. But that's only as a guarantee against the project supporting itself.
Now, one of the pieces of the project is a hotel. Was it 250 some odd rooms? There was concern early on that, well, this is going to contribute to the glut of hotel rooms here in Indianapolis. It's called the Alexander, which is kind of a different name for a hotel. Is it a chain or is this kind of a off on its own?
Yeah, we went through a lot of decision making on the hotel project. Essentially, it's a 209-room hotel at the end of the day with a heavy conference and meeting room component. As our location in the city, we are not directly accessible to the convention center where you have a lot of business drawn in for that. So our best position is we're sitting between Anthem Wellpoint, Farm Bureau, Eli Lilly, and Rolls-Royce. And so these corporate companies bring in a lot of contractors and corporate travelers that are popping in for 2 days, 3 days. They also generate a great deal of meetings that they cannot have in their own facilities. So at our location, we tailored the hotel specifically to take our focus on the business segment is on a corporate transient traveler, weekend traveler for as it relates to Bankers Life and Lucas Oil. But there's a large group meeting component to this where we provide a full service application where you come in with 50 people. You buy the complete meeting package. You get your rooms, your AV services, your conference facilities, your meeting rooms, and your meals all included, as opposed to an a la carte. The hotel's name, Alexander, came from Alexander Rahlstedt, which is the city's architect. He studied under LaFont, and who designed the city of D.C., dropped in Indianapolis and laid out the grid that we live in today.
239-1310, 239-1310, it's Afternoons with Amos. We are down at City Way. You may have a question about this development or development in general. We'll find out, you know, a little bit later who Buckingham is. No, they're not the people that built the palace in London. I keep thinking that. Let me go to Tori on the line at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, hi.
Tori, go ahead. You're on the air.
I'm not sure who the guest is, but hello to your guest. I'm wondering if any of the neighborhood stabilization grant dollars were used in any way to initiate this. It seems like it may have started the same year those grants were coming in.
That's a great question. This is why we have the smartest talk show audience in the country. This project, did it use any of the federal neighborhood stabilization grants?
No, it did not. Our funds were directly through DPW for the public right-of-way works and from the state of Indiana.
So none of Uncle's money is involved in this?
No, I don't believe there's any of Uncle's money in this.
All right, Tori, we left some of Uncle's money. They left Uncle's money on the table for neighborhoods to use. But that's a great question. Appreciate it. Is part of the science of development being able to find pools of dollars, where the dollars are coming from, so you're no different than a nonprofit that's trying, and they're going to, you know, apply for grants to whoever they can get the funding from to do their project. So they may go to this foundation or that foundation and Company A, Company B, Company Z to get the funds to do a project in a neighborhood. You're a for-profit. You're trying to find in your project, and if you're successful, everybody wins.
Yes, it's not uncommon for a very large-scale project like this to be a public-private partnership as a financial structure. To be a purely private project, the scale of especially in an urban infill project, which have premiums above and beyond suburban development, when you take a raw piece of less expensive to turn that into a project, and you can spread out and don't have to have the density we have, all of those cost premiums have to be offset. You don't necessarily have the same profit on an urban infill project as you would in the suburbs, so you have to offset the cost.
Let me follow that up, because you know, people that are listening, they may not understand the difference in cost. So you said this was 40. This is 40 acres.
This is 14 acres.
So 40 acres. Why would 14 acres in the city cost more to develop than 14 acres in the middle of Hamilton County or Boone County or Morgan?
Well, it would start with the density. So if we were to develop the 700,000 square foot of building here, we're doing it on what essentially is 14 acres. In the suburbs, we could do the same project over 20, so we can spread out. The cost of parking spaces, for example, to build a surface lot, you're somewhere in the range of $3,000 a space. To build a structured parking garage, you're $15,000 a space. The building density itself, as you grow higher, there are building code implications that raise the cost of the structure that carries it, the fire protection systems that are involved, and then your utility cost. If you're running a simple lateral off of a main line in the suburbs, it has a much lower cost than if you were to basically cut up a city street and work around the steam and the chilled water and all the infrastructure that's in the city to make that connection.
So the first challenge to do any kind of development in a city, whether it's Indianapolis, whether it's Lagodi, is it's going to be more expensive because it's older, you got infrastructure, the blocks are tighter and smaller, the ability to kind of just spread out is a little different than just going out in the middle of nowhere.
Absolutely. And then going beyond that, you have what in a city's core, they're very seldom do you walk up to a particular lot or site and have no previous uses. So the buildings that were there before, they may have just been pushed into the ground and you've got to excavate those. They may have had industrial use that have extraordinary environmental remediation involved.
239-1310, 239-1310, this afternoon's news. We're with Scott Travis, Vice President of Buckingham. What is Buckingham? What do y'all do?
Buckingham is a full-service real estate platform. We have property management services, asset management services.
That's like apartments and stuff.
Yes, we manage nearly 18,000 apartments in 10 states. We also have a full-service construction, commercial and residential construction department, and then we have a development and real estate department.
So it's like you figure out what you want to do. You have the people to build it, and then you got the expertise to get somebody to rent it.
We have all three services. So from concept to completion and operation, we wear all three hats.
Now, you part of this development is residential, and a lot of times when people have heard about residential in downtown Indianapolis, they hear condos, and they're hearing, oh, $500,000 condos, $1 million condos. Are the residential here condos, or are these just ordinary, good old-fashioned Hoosier apartments?
I wouldn't describe them as ordinary, but they are apartments, and they're an upscale urban type of development.
Wait a minute, what does that mean in England? Does that mean I got to go get a loan to pay the monthly rent?
I'd say in terms of development, anytime you have new product in the market, you're going to be at the higher end of the rent scale. Indianapolis has a variety. We have 7 properties downtown. We have renovated several other buildings, and so we have a variety of price points. Cityway in particular, because of its location to the corporations nearby, has a rent structure that's appropriate to that.
What are we talking about? $900,000 a month?
Our one bedroom apartment started around 900 to 1,000. It was a good guess there, and we range up to a 3-bedroom unit that's nearly 3,400.
What do you get for $3,400 a month, 3 bedrooms? For that, I would expect, you know, one of these little magic CNN touchscreen. Oh my goodness, I touched that thing and the whole thing moved upside down. What for that kind of investment for somebody, what do they get?
Well, in every one of our apartments, we have upscale finishes applied to it. So you have stainless steel appliances, you have granite countertops, kitchen and bathroom. We have exposed ductwork, and in many cases, there's an exposed brick wall. In
it's kind of like a loft, but not a loft.
Yeah, there is a loft quality to it, but there's more of the finishes quality of an upscale apartment or home that you would buy today.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. One of the, in terms of this kind of development, again, and with the experience you all have had in residential, what in your other projects in Buckingham has been around how long as a company?
The company has been around for nearly 27 years.
So what kind of, was this a project where you bring everything you've learned in 27 years and so you don't make the mistakes you may have made in other places? And have you done similar kind of in the heart of a big city kind of development, or is this something new for you guys?
Well, it's multiple answers to that question. So we bring to each project the expertise that we've, you know, lessons learned from everything we've done before. And that's not based on the scale of the project. Even the simplest projects require that expertise. And so the 25 years that we have collectively and all the experience that the people that have come to the company in the last 5 to 10 years bring with them from their experience comes to the table. So all of those things play a factor to it. As far as it relates to this scale of project or mixed-use development, this is not uncommon. We've partnered with other developers, such as up in South Bend. We did a project with Kite Realty Group and White Lodging that was a mixed-use development near Notre Dame called Eddy Street Commons. With multiple uses such as this. As far as the scale of this and mixed-use development, this is the first time this has been done in the city of Indianapolis. And so this is pushing the envelope for our experience in terms of this many uses put together and a complex project that involves as many moving parts as it did.
239-1310, 239-1310, South News. We're with Scott Travis. We'll take a break. When we come back, we sit down on two of these comfortable chairs, which may be what you get, you know, if you have an apartment down here or other things. We also, you know, we want to find out when they built this, was any of us in? And see, Scott doesn't know what us means. The audience knows what us involved in all of this, because this is a private development, not a development, even though government dollars and private dollars are all mixed in. It's not a project directly of state and local government. You know, how well did they do in terms of utilizing minority-owned businesses? And how can projects like this be done in smaller neighborhoods? And what are some of the obstacles to even doing business in a big city? It's Afternoons with Amos in our first hour. In our second hour, we'll do follow-up and get more of your reaction. The release yesterday of the report by Indiana Black Expo on the state of black youth. And if that's not enough, Purdue University finally found a football coach from Kent State. And guess what? It's a brother. Only the 4th African-American ever to be a head coach at a Big Ten university. The 2nd African-American to be a head coach at Purdue University after Carolyn Peck was head coach back in the late 1990s of Purdue women's basketball. We'll talk about that, all that and more. It's Afternoons with Amos. We're live at Cityway or at the corner of South Street. More after these with Scott Travis at the developers putting together of CityWay, were minority-owned businesses involved in building this epic?
Absolutely. We walked into the project, and in our agreement with the city, we took voluntary goals on that were parallel the city's goals. And to date, as of November, we have exceeded the minority business participation on the construction of the project. We're nearly 16% minority business.
Is it with all the minority-owned businesses, even African-owned contractors, whatever, with experience, is it easier for developers like you to find minority-owned contractors and vendors here in Indianapolis that not only have the experience but the capacity to do the job?
We find across the spectrum there are professionals in every regard, and we spend a considerable amount of time and effort in our outreach program, and so we bring on professional consultants to make sure that we get the word to everybody when we have an opportunity for bidding on a project, and so that we find that's the most valuable way to make those connections.
Of the vendors and the retailers that are coming in here, the hotels, the restaurants, what has been done to encourage them that their workforce ought to reflect the diversity of the city?
Whenever we bid a section of the project, for example, if you're going to bid the concrete work, we also require their as part of their bid submittal, we require their commitments to MBE and VBE qualifications. And so when we are selecting our contractors, we are basing it not on price, but price, quality, diversification, and so forth. So that is always a consideration when we make our final selections.
In terms of putting together a project like this, what you call in your business a mixed use, which is different types of things in a development, you know, it could have been office building and retail or residential and office and what have you. Is retail the hardest to bring in?
Well, a mixed-use building is really, to describe that in its basic form, it's a hybrid building where you have, whether it's retail and residential above or office above, anytime you put two different zoning uses together in a building, that's a mixed use. But we've put four together in of eight buildings, and so this is mixed use on steroids, if you will. As far as the retail component of it, that is, we looked at this market burgeoning market or an opportunity for services. Again, 18,000 employees with nothing available to them but a couple fast food services down the street and the cafeteria in the building. And for 18,000 people, I know that I want to get out of the office once or twice a week and try something new. So there's kind of a bet on that regard. Retail and office, obviously, since 2008 have been slow. But we think well positioned in the market to be able to fry that. In addition, we looked at CityWay as a development, as a new neighborhood. And so, from a neighborhood perspective, maybe you walk out the door from your office with some of your coworkers and say, "Let's go grab lunch." You're not trying to figure out what restaurant you're going to go to and walk to it. You're walking to CityWay to figure out maybe what you're going to choose when you get there. So it's a destination more than it is a name.
One of the frustrations when we talk to listeners and they look at their particular neighborhoods in older neighborhoods of any city, it could be older neighborhoods of Noblesville, it could be older neighborhoods of Indianapolis, the older neighborhoods of places like Muncie and Fort Wayne have similar problems, and it always seems like the residents are willing and retailers seem to be the most reluctant, that it's easier for the retailers to go to the shopping center being built du jour rather than make the investment in older neighborhoods. From your company's experience in doing these kind of projects, you know, in 10 states, in parts of the country, is retail the hardest to bring back to older neighborhoods, that it's easier for them to go to the shiny new strip mall or the shiny new shopping area?
I think it's less about being old or new than it is more about the density. We provide
people close in.
Right, absolutely. If you can show if you can show the data where you have 35,000 cars driving down this street already, it's pretty easy for a retailer to say, that would be a good spot for me from a visibility perspective and accessibility. The older neighborhoods generally are less traveled, and so you would be depending especially in a residential neighborhood, an older residential neighborhood, without a major thoroughfare, you're depending on just that as your a customer base, and sometimes that's the limitation.
How important is it for a neighborhood or for advocacy groups, I mean, you guys don't do a deal based on gut. In other words, even if somebody came to Buckingham and said, I got a great piece of land for you, and I'll give you the land for nothing. We'll help you out. We'll do all that you can take. Just take it, and we think you're the greatest developers in the world, and you'll do that. You still are going to crunch numbers, look at the data. How important is it if a neighborhood or an advocacy group is trying to turn a neighborhood around that they really have to do the homework to find out, how many people are there? What's the density? You know, how many cars drive by each day? How important is it that they do the homework to start to entice a company like yours to really look at an area?
Yeah, I think that any information that you could provide on the front end, the developer would obviously do their own due diligence to make sure that the numbers do work. But any information that you could give on the front end, or maybe it's a community project that will generate new traffic that you make the developer aware of. And so, you know, not everything is always obvious to everybody as they drive down the street. So if there's going to be a major infusion of new development or redevelopment of a neighborhood, that may not be apparent to everybody until it's done. And so it's not unlike us trying to attract retail tenants for the site when it was a park, sell a vision. And sometimes it just takes the concrete facts, and frankly, sometimes it takes having the structure built for them to be able to see the viability.
People have not driven up Delaware Avenue in the last couple of months from the south side of the city going towards the downtown area, the north side of the city. Delaware is now a two-way street between the arena, Maryland, all the way down to the Lilly headquarters at McCarty. That's different.
Yeah, that we as our design team came on board and really started to look at the master plan of this development, their number one priority was, you have to make this a pedestrian friendly and safe environment to encourage your people to walk here and to take advantage of that. And so we took the advice of our consultants and we did traffic studies. But ultimately, to your point, Delaware Street was a 5-lane highway running north south to north at about 50 to 60 miles an hour for most people. And that doesn't encourage a lot of people to walk along or cross that intersection to go to a new restaurant. And so a great deal of our planning and design was to redevelop the streetscape on both South Street and Delaware. And so Delaware has gone from a 5-lane northbound only to 2-way traffic, 1 south and 3 lanes north. And of the 3 northbound lanes, the east lane is dedicated for parking all but rush hour. So we've really changed the speed and the character of that. We've introduced raised intersections, so the actual street comes up to the sidewalk level in the intersections. And so it's just another visual and physical cue to the driver that you probably should slow down. It's a different environment than it was before. And subconsciously, people, when they're in their cars, make these decisions with these visual cues without even considering them. And so if you walk up and down Delaware Street today or South Street today in the realm of our project, you see a drastic reduction in the speed the cars travel.
I got to ask, what did this do to Indigo? Because Indigo obviously had buses going northbound on Delaware, southbound on Pennsylvania. Is Indigo getting rerouted so they kind of loop back if they're going south from downtown that would used to go down Pennsylvania? Do they loop around and pass by Cityway in both directions?
You know, I do not know if they've changed their route to date. I do know that we have two dedicated spaces, curb locations for future Indigo stops. At Cityway on Delaware Street. To my knowledge, they've not changed any of the routing to date or taken advantage of the southbound lane. But I would suspect that will be impacted in the future.
They probably are waiting on density.
I would imagine. But we're anxious. We're anxious for that bus stop to be incorporated.
In creating this, what were the challenges? Was the challenges the nature of the vacant site? The challenges of working in such a tight, compressed area, even though it is this many acres, it's still a compressed area. And what impact does this development have when you've got a gazillion trains roaring by at all hours of the day or night?
Right. From a physical perspective, the challenges on this site are many. The two that come to mind that are the biggest are, it's as a small urban site with a great deal of construction activity, you have to have a very well-orchestrated plan, staging plan, where materials are going to go, who has access to what street when deliveries come and go, and who can act, and who, when things can be lifted over certain areas. And so it takes a great deal of planning to be able to execute properly. And to their credit, our construction team have done a wonderful job in that regard. As far as the sort of the political side of this, or the community side of getting the complexity of this, it's just explaining the story very well and making people comfortable with the plan and the execution of a public-private partnership, and how those monies are going to be effective in raising the development or the economic viability of downtown. This project is projected to develop or create $350 million of economic impact to the city of Indianapolis. So that comes in the form of income for individuals that will get new jobs, to taxes and community benefit. So $350 million over 5 years. In addition, the project was anticipated to create 2,400 jobs, whether they be temporary through construction or permanent, where you're working at the hotel or the restaurants. And we've seen nearly 1,600 lives impacted by this project, the number of people that have walked on site and contributed to the construction.
The buildings that are on the north end of this site, right up against the railroad track, is that residential?
We have the building at the far north end is a combination of residential and retail. And to your point, we're 20 yards away from the tracks, and we have residents living there.
They're used to the train going through.
I live downtown, not at this particular site, but I hear the horns. And I hear the horns from 10 or 15 blocks away. The train that passes City Way is an elevated track, so there's not a reason to blow the horn at or near our particular property, which obviously would be a challenge. And these are also freight trains that move at a very, very slow pace. And so I think the fastest train I've seen go by here can't be going more than 10 miles an hour. And so the noise level is much more reduced.
But it's also part of the ambiance of an urban area. You're down here by the train.
It is. For anybody that's lived in the city, New York or Chicago, living by the L, I think there's a certain conditioning that comes to it. And you just, those things just become background noise that doesn't affect your daily life.
How this project, obviously the rents are higher than normal, so that would mean that the income of the people living in City Way are going to be higher than some of the residential buildings just to the southeast of you, going down towards Virginia Avenue, the northern part of Fountain Square. How do we keep income diversity as well as racial diversity in downtown? Because people in my community are probably listening to this and saying, okay, that's all fine, well, and good, but this is another example of they're pushing us out of our neighborhoods, even though nobody really was living on this land ever. This has all been industrial or business land for like almost forever. I don't think people have ever lived in this part of downtown, maybe the late 19th century, the early part of the 20th century, but obviously not in the modern era. How do we, when people invest in developments like this, which are upscale, how do you make sure that the downtown neighborhood stays racially and economically diverse?
Well, I think the simple answer for me is our project and the impact that it has. And so when you look at the jobs that are created, particularly at City Way, those jobs, they do two things. One, they reinforce they provide the services that are required and desired by the corporate employees downtown, and so that helps attract and retain. And then the new jobs are created. There's obviously, with every job that, you open up a store, there's going to be additional service provided to that store. And that impacts the city on a much greater scale. So new jobs create even more jobs, generally speaking. The opportunity for it is an upscale apartment, so the price associated with that, but it's not, to your point, we didn't displace any living in anybody's homes in creating this, and so that may be the case in some other situations where you're displacing.
Now, where we're located here in the Discovery Center will also be eventually a YMCA. Is that more a YMCA for adults and young adults as opposed to adults as well as families with kids?
No, we've been meeting with the YMCA team for the last two and a half years, and they've been very excited about this project. A couple things on that point is the WISE program is across the nation the same. It is an income-based membership program, and so regardless of the doors are open to everybody essentially. And then with the lack of an urban Y, we have the Anthonaeum and the Bike Hub. There really is not a service provider downtown for everybody, and so we would imagine that the membership of the YMCA downtown will be a very diverse group. And open to everybody.
So it can also be available, because I know there are schools within a mile of here. There's schools on the western side of White River, a couple of IPS schools. Obviously, you got the Heron Charter School at the northern end of downtown. You got Crispus Attucks on the other end. So there could be ways for school collaborations.
I would imagine it's certainly. I don't want to dive into the WISE programming and how they set up their relationships and partnerships, but this I would imagine would be run very much like all the other YMCAs that, across the nation. And just as important, the YMCA saw the value in the Cityway project as no more important than the other two that were on the books, and so they've bundled together the Pike, the future Pike YMCA and the Meadows YMCA with the Cityway Y in their fundraising campaign. So it's basically they're raising money for all three. They don't want to see one or the other in fundraising.
We're talking about a neighborhood that's quote-unquote upscale, but the Buckingham Group, you guys have been involved in what is emerging as a different kind of neighborhood, literally on the opposite corner of downtown, the northwest corner of downtown, where the old Fall Creek Y used to be, is now the Avenue, and that's a totally different residential area from what this is.
To be perfectly candid with that particular location, with a burgeoning student population at IUPUI, again we program to the location, and so that particular location has a very high demand for market based apartments for students, and so we tailored the program and the type of units more towards the students.
Which means in terms of incomes, and students ain't got no money because they all owe all of their money in loans. That's kind of a moderate to semi-low income area.
The way we would react to that, for example, in we built townhomes at Cityway as part of the unit mix, but in at the Avenue we have 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, and 4-bedroom. So, for example, the 4-bedroom, the idea is that there isn't a lot of money in a student's budget, but when you put four of them together, they can afford a nice apartment, and so that's a little bit less space. And Cityway is no different in that regard. We do have product that's been built so that you can have what we call them often as mingles. So two single professionals or two single young people in their beginning of their career that want to live and work and play in an environment that Cityway offers. But can't afford the apartment by themselves. They'll make the arrangements and they'll share the rent.
One of the other things that I understand here at Cityway is, and this is an effort where Indianapolis has been semi-successful in some regards and not successful in others, and that is art in public spaces. And I understand you're going to have art in the parking garages.
It's ongoing right now. We have a very strong art program in Cityway. The predominant location for most of the art will be located in the hotel, and fortunately for us, we were able to partner with the Indianapolis Museum of Art to help us curate the art program, which I think is the first in the nation for a hotel to have an actual museum as the curator. And so we've had their wisdom and their vision lockstep the entire way. And to your point, the garage, we have an interesting artist who is who's based in London, and he is globally renowned for his graffiti art. And he is doing somewhere in the order of a dozen to 18 installations throughout the garage of graffiti art.
Yeah, hopefully nobody will be inspired to try to graffiti art over his graffiti art. How important, because Buckingham is headquartered here in Indianapolis, how important is it, or how much extra pressure is it that you're in your headquarters city, so the big bosses are looking at this, that this has got to be perfecter than perfect?
I think we put the pressure on ourselves, and we do that regardless of where we develop. We're very, very proud of the fact that the company's been based in Marion County all but, I think, 12 months of its entire existence. The urban, being in Indianapolis is important to our culture, and it's important to our employees. And so when we do, regardless of whether it's here or it's in Ohio or it's in Illinois, we would take the same care to every project that we do. But we're especially proud to be able to walk around and show our neighbors and our friends what we're doing.
This is designed to walk around. This is not just one big building on a block. It's you guys, the streets cut in here, and it's really designed for people to walk around.
Yeah, going back to our consultants and the walkability factor of how to get to the site, but once you get here, to be able to walk through the site was important. And so our designers took great care in creating pedestrian corridors through the site. And so we refrained from creating massive buildings with a bunch of uses inside of them. Rather, we created a series of buildings. So we have 8 interconnected buildings, some via bridges, some via sidewalks. And then we also respected the grid. The Louisiana Street has never been connected as a...
I noticed when I was driving down here, I said, when did Louisiana Street get on this side of town?
Louisiana Street exists between Alabama Street and Virginia, so one block. And then it stops because of the trains, the way the train layout was, and whatever use or the previous uses for this particular site. But when we laid the buildings out, we took our architects took that attention to detail and created a pedestrian thoroughfare that would be just the same size and scale as Louisiana if it would have gone through.
All right, so now if people want more information, Cityway, y'all got this fancy website, which is at
cityway.com.
That's real simple. It took y'all, years to figure that out. Where did the name come up? Because I think the original name was supposed to be North of South, and there were people that liked to read the Indianapolis Business Journal that thought that was a hip and cool name. How did it go from North to South to Cityway, just something more simpler?
Well, and, to be perfectly candid, the North to South name was born out of the very beginning of the project. Where are we located? We generally describe our developments as by their location name, and then we involve a branding strategy and a marketing strategy to give the project its own name. And North to South, because of the long process we were in and getting City County Council involved and the community involvement, it got a lot more traction than it would normally. But frankly, we're not North to South. We're South of South, too. The YMCA will be South of South, and the development has the ability to go on the east or west side of Delaware and even farther north. So we felt a name that would describe it as a destination in a new neighborhood was important, and so we went through a long and arduous process to come up with the name. We feel like the name Cityway, it's about a way of living. We think this development is about a new type of living, of truly live, work, and play environment that many people tout but don't have.
As I was driving down here, one thing I noticed was all of a sudden Alabama Street, which usually has been a dead street, dead ending into parking lots for Eli Lilly, suddenly looks like they have extended Alabama into the Eli Lilly campus. So it looks like this is a grand entryway. Is that perhaps going to end up the main entrance into Eli Lilly Corporate Center as opposed to down off of McCarty Street at Delaware, which has been since the year 3?
Yeah, a couple things on that. Lilly has redeveloped their parking strategy, and we've constructed a lot on the west side of Delaware. And so they've moved some parking around. Obviously, when we broke ground on this site, we consumed a great deal of their parking spaces. So the parking lot reconfiguration has been part of that initiative. Another initiative was the Merrill Street, which crosses in front of Eli Lilly's campus, or the front door on that north side, has been redeveloped and connects over to the Rolls-Royce campus via federal project that was approved many years ago. And then so those two things are the physical changes on this side of the campus, but just as important, Lilly has really two front doors, the front door at the admin offices, which is at McCarty in Delaware, and then the second entrance, which is at Alabama and Merrill Street, is the research and development. And I think sometime within the last 4 years, early in the project, the pendulum shifted for the first time that more square footage was dedicated to research and development than to admin at this campus. And so that door has become much, much more important. That's where the majority of their contractors arrive. And so they want to celebrate that and acknowledge that. And you know, I think that they've tried to reduce the physical or the visual barriers of their corporate campus to the city, and to not put a fence in as little and do not cross.
All right, it is called Cityway. You go to cityway.com, cityway.com, or you just come on down. And if you were going to a Pacer game or an event at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, instead of, I don't want to walk under the railroad tracks because I don't want to go down there, now you have an excuse to walk past the railroad tracks off of Delaware and come down and find out what is going on. They've got restaurants. They've got hotels. They've got a place where you can look and see, do you really want an apartment up here? Or more importantly, just come and see this fancy. It's worth it just to come to see the screen that moves. This, nobody does this in town. You're going to have every apartment complex and real estate developer come next spring put one of these in their little building.
Yeah, it goes back to we had 10 acres of asphalt, and we were trying to convince the people that that's going to be a great place to live or a great place to put their restaurant. So we had to create Cityway virtually, and so we did that with this technology. We're very happy with it. It's been very easy to convey what we're doing here.
Does this mean in some of your regular apartment complexes across the country, down the road, we'll see you'll have little mini of these, so when a renter comes in, they can see virtually what their unit might look like?
Actually, we've done this for years. This is at many of our projects, or most of our projects.
One of my staffers is really impressed with that y'all have done that.
No, we have. We like the individual kiosk that allows the potential tenant to be able to walk up and explore virtually all of the unit types. And so we've been using technology like this for in our leasing centers for probably 10 years.
All right, is Scott Travis, Vice President with the Buckingham Group. They're the people that are putting Cityway together. It literally, when you see this, it looks unlike any group of city blocks anywhere in Indianapolis. It looks more like a real city as opposed to the cornfield with the lights. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to be down here.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.